This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Finisar, supplier of active optical cables for high-performance connectivity. www.finisarcables.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite for Friday, September 25th, 2009, available every Friday from iTunes. I'm Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research, joined as always by my co-host, Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Good morning again, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Addison.
This is a pretty big week for HPC news, Michael, including Microsoft's acquisition of Interactive Supercomputing and a product announcement from SGI that harkened back to the good old days, and we'll get to both of those stories in a few minutes. But first, Michael, it was Intel Developer Forum this week, a pretty big show at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. You followed some of those stories. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, there was quite a bit going on. Of course, Intel is talking about all their future silicon, and there's a lot of cool stuff coming up, and a lot of it is going to affect our little corner of the market. The first thing they demoed almost at the very beginning of the conference was Larrabee. Now, Larrabee is really not an HPC chip. That's their graphics processor, their GPU-ish type chip that has CPU cores in it. The first iteration is going out to traditional graphics users, but I'm pretty sure it's going to end up in HPC one way or another with later iterations or derivatives. So what they did at the conference, or the forum this week, was they had their first ever demo of the silicon. They had a little cute real-time ray tracing application going on, and people were very interested that there was actually silicon out there that was executing Larrabee type thing. So that was interesting. They didn't spend a whole lot of time on that. I think that was just a tease for things to come. That Larrabee chip, I think it's still scheduled for sometime next year for first commercial production, and some people are thinking it might even be delayed beyond that. But it'll be interesting to watch that as it develops, and for HPC lovers, I think people will start using those chips immediately, even if they're not for us intentionally. The other thing they talked about quite a bit was their new Westmere shrink of the Mehalem architecture. That's the 32-nanometer shrink, and they went through the usual story about how much better power and power efficiency and performance they're going to get out of these. And that's basically the story there. It's not an architectural improvement on the Westmere chips. It's basically a shrink. They're going to add a few tweaks to it architecturally, but mainly it's just smaller, better, faster type chips coming out, and they're going to come out in 2010 as well. I think actually some of them are going to come out at the end of this year, but that's the client side. The ones we're interested in, the server chips, 2010. A little closer to home as far as time-wise are the Mehalem EX chips. Now, they're going to be produced, I think, sort of soon, like any day now or towards the end of this year at the latest, but I don't think we'll see those servers coming out until maybe 2010. Now, the Mehalem EX is this multi-socketed, that's 4-socket and above, server chips that Intel's produced. And this is really the first time Intel has had a real competitive multi-socket offering, which I think is going to change the market a little bit for SMPs. Up until now, AMD has sort of owned that space, and now with the EXs coming out, it's going to be interesting. I think a lot of the OEM vendors have signed on. IBM and Supermicro have already announced 4-socket machines, and there's 8-socket machines on the drawing board. In fact, it's more than on the drawing board. They're out there in beta somewhere. At the forum, they talked about, I think there was 8 OEMs that already had 8-socket and above machines with these Mehalem EX chips. And I think it's just going to be, you know, there's going to be sort of this revival of SMP machines, and that's going to extend into HPC. The other thing that sort of caught my eye there was sort of at the other end of the scale were these low-power Xeon 3400 processors, of that that are just either entry-level processors, just single socket guys, but they're going to come out with these sort of ultra-low power, I don't know if I call them ultra-low, but they're very low power, like 30 watts, 45 watts, that they want to target something they're calling microservers, which are basically these mini blade systems for sort of these hyperscale data centers and containerized data centers. I'm not sure if those will immediately make their way into HPC, but I think it's something to watch since hyperscale is definitely something that HPC is concerned with and is modeling for. So these are sort of halfway between, you know, what you might think like an Atom or an ARM chip and then the full-blown, you know, Xeon server chips. So these are like sort of mini micro Xeons, I guess you could call them, and sort of they sort of made this compromise, and they're going to build these, or they're going to try to encourage vendors to build these micro servers for sort of the hyperscale market. It's just something to keep an eye on, and I think those chips, at least the 30-watt chip is coming out in 2010. I think the 45-watt chip for the Xeon 3400 is going to be at the end of this year.
You're right, Michael. There's a lot of hardware news that goes on at Intel Developer Forum. It is a chip company, and there's what I like about IDF is that there's also a big focus on developers and software issues. You know, there's even a series of presentations on what are the software features and kind of ecosystem features around the chip that enable productivity for HPC beyond the chip itself. So there's kind of a lot that goes on even beyond just the chips.
Right. I think there was a lot of talk about software that was going on behind the scenes. I think they even, I'm not sure if this is at IDF, but they announced the CP, which is the Intel language for parallel computing. They announced the beta program was sort of going into effect for the CP language. They were trying to pick up early users to sort of develop CP applications and to play around with the that research language. What kinds of things were you seeing software-wise?
Well, I attended, among the sessions I saw, I attended a briefing by Tom Metzger, HPC Solutions Architect, and Mike Heydrich from the marketing team on technology aspects that go beyond the processor itself. And they gave an overview of obvious things that we've already covered, like Intel Cluster Ready, but also things like a Turbo Boost feature that allows you to overclock some or all of the cores depending on what the environmental considerations were within your environment. So going up on the clock speed when you're able to in order to get more performance. So features like that that they're making developers aware of in order to get the maximum performance out of a system, I think were pretty interesting things to cover. You know, we weren't the only ones who noticed that it's IDF this week, and you can always count on AMD to try to muddy the waters by making a couple of announcements we should probably mention pretty quickly. And you saw some AMD news coming across too, right?
Right. There was actually quite a bit of AMD news. I mean, there was just a few things we concentrated on, but you're right. I mean, AMD does not like Intel to own the news cycle in the weeks where they have these Intel developer forums. The thing that we covered mostly was the new server platforms. They introduced three new chipsets, and the big news here, I guess, is that for the first time, it's basically only AMD-branded silicon on those chipsets, and these are all server platforms that are coming out over the next 12 months. So they announced those at the beginning of the week to try and take a little bit of the thunder away from Intel, but it was mostly an Intel week, of course.
Yeah, my favorite from an entertainment standpoint of AMD's press releases was that they amplified that the European Commission released some details that backed up their ruling in the antitrust case against Intel from several months ago. It's not new news and not worth rehashing, but certainly provided a little bit of anti-Intel entertainment going out on the on the eve of Intel Developer Forum. I thought the timing of that couldn't have been any better for AMD, but not worth us discussing much more. It's kind of more interesting to talk about what the actual content was at IDF. As we give our overview of IDF, I also managed to catch up with Nash Palaniswamy, who's a senior manager of throughput computing, after the show, and he shared some of his thoughts with me. I'm speaking now with Dr. Nash Palaniswamy, the Senior Manager for Throughput Computing at Intel, who was kind enough to join me at the conclusion of Intel Developer Forum. Nash, thanks very much for joining me.
Hey, thanks, Edison, for the opportunity.
So we're talking about IDF, which obviously is a big show that transcends a lot of market areas that go well beyond HPC. What do you think, for you, are some of the main takeaways from the show overall?
Yeah, IDF is held every year. It's an opportunity for developers to meet, collaborate, and learn from one another. It's also an opportunity for them to meet like senior Intel fellows and top engineers who come equipped with extensive knowledge on next-generation technologies from Intel. So it's a great opportunity for developers to learn from each other and from Intel. You know, this year's focus, as you may have seen from some of the presentations, was Intel was talking about a technology and how we have technologies which work across the continuum of computing, and also the opportunity for developers that we provide with advanced software tools and developer communities that allow you to take advantage of the software opportunity for these platforms across the continuum of computing.
You know, speaking of development, Nash, obviously one of the big discussion topics, not only at IDF, but across the HPC community right now, is software development. In particular, looking at what's the licensing model and the optimization model going forward with multi-core. What comments do you have regarding HPC software development overall?
Yeah, Intel is increasing its investment for parallel programming. You know, as is evident, you know, from the recent launch of Parallel Studio, an integrated tool set for multi-core parallelism on Windows, and we had recent acquisitions of Silk++ and RapidMind. You know, together we're building a portfolio of tools that addresses all types of parallelism, task, thread, data, and we also have a huge investment in MPI tools that allow you to scale to a larger number of cores. We're confident that Intel tools are fast, becoming easier to adopt for all types of multi-core programming and scalable high-performance computing applications. And they not only give you maximum performance today from our multi-core solutions, but will continue to provide you scale-forward performance as you move to newer architectures.
Nash, on another line of thought, NVIDIA is having its GPU technology conference next week in San Jose, so there's a pretty good chance that we're going to have GPU computing again as a topic of conversation. What's Intel's view on accelerators and their role in our future path in computing?
That's a very good question. You know, accelerators have been around for a long time, and they're good for specialized tasks, you know, tasks which fit into memory, which are data parallel, or fit the type of accelerator. And Intel is all about supporting innovation on our platforms. In fact, we have the QuickSys Technology Initiative, where we have licensed our front-side bus and QuickPath to IHPs for FPGA-based acceleration. And at IDF, we had Extreme Data and Nalitech showcase their solutions on Intel platforms. So we are very open, and we want people to innovate on our platforms. However, from accelerating performance, we believe that you can accelerate performance by optimizing for multi-core using our advanced tools. And as I explained to you in the previous questions, we are putting a lot of investment in our software tools to get the maximum performance from the multi-core. And we actually showed some examples during my talk at IDF, where we showed some examples in financial services where people were leaving performance on the table. We actually used our tools and our MKL libraries and OpenMP, and we got up to 27x speedup for Black Scholes and about 7x for Monte Carlo. So we are seeing customers getting tremendous benefit, and the baselines are different when you optimize for multi-core. So we are very open to accelerators, and we are all for innovation on our platform.
We've been speaking with Dr. Nash Palaniswamy, the Senior Manager for Throughput Computing at Intel, talking about IDF and the future role of computing. Nash, thanks very much for joining us, and safe travels.
Thanks, Edison.
And we'll be right back after this 30-second break.
You're listening to HPC Wire Soundbite.
Finisar's high-performance active optical cables accelerate data connectivity for storage, networking, and HPC applications. Finisar's cable family includes LaserWire for 10 gigabit Ethernet, QuadWire for 40 gigabit InfiniBand QDR, and C-Wire for 120 gigabit InfiniBand QDR. Finisar is the world's largest supplier and trusted leader in optical communications. Visit www.finisarcables.com to download your cable family brochure.
And now, back to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
So some of that Intel Silicon we've just been talking about is actually going to end up in SGI's new personal supercomputer that they announced this week. That was the SGI Octane 3, which takes the name of their old Octane line that they used to have back in the day. So the SGI Octane starts out as sort of the configuration, the lowest configuration is a graphics workstation where you can stick in a Tesla GPU card or just a regular visualization Quadro card from NVIDIA, but it scales up to an 80-core cluster, which is fairly impressive. I think the whole thing at the lowest configuration starts at under 8,000 and scales up from there. In that sense, it's more in the range of a Cray CX1. It's a desk-side machine, moderate-sized cluster, but they're calling it a personal supercomputer. I know how you hate that name, Addison, but that's what they're calling it. But it is a personal system. It's a personal mini-cluster, whatever you want to call it. And it looks like, basically they've joined the personal HPC party with this announcement. What do you think of it?
Well, you're right about the personal supercomputer and my feelings there, but let me forget that for a second and say that I think this is a fantastic product that is driving right into the gap that we've been talking about in the market. And what they should be calling it is what it is, which is a technical workstation. They have brought back the traditional workstation category that was the glory days of SGI and Sun. I love that they've named it Octane, which is an iconic product in this space, and they're signaling that under the new SGI that there's part of the old SGI there, that they're driving into this space. And when you look at the ISVs that they're lining up on this platform, that includes things like CAD/CAM software like CATIA, as well as engineering codes like a Fluent or a Nastran or an Abacus Ansys, scientific codes like BLAST, like Hummer, they're signaling that this is the entry-level platform that's going to bridge that gap between the high-end workstation and the low-end cluster. What happened when the traditional workstation market kind of went away and got subsumed into PCs and high-end PCs is, those could do what traditional workstations did 10 years ago, but we haven't seen any new real capabilities coming out there, and it's time for the workstation to get more powerful again. And finally, we're seeing traditional HPC companies like SGI, like Cray with the CX1, get into this space. Personal supercomputer, I've railed against that term and why, but finally I think Cray and SGI are at least getting this into the right space, and if people see these systems as workstations, as entry-level clusters, where you can integrate your high-end workstation codes, your high-end graphics codes with an entry-level cluster in the same platform, that's going to be a very important development platform for ISVs. It's it's really in sync with what we were just talking about with IDF and promoting development for HPC. I think these are really important platforms out there in the market, and I love that SGI is doing this box. Of course, I could quibble with the marketing a little bit, but not too much, because they did go and call it an Octane, which I love.
Yeah, I think you're right that this is a good bridge from the technical workstations up to HPC clusters. I think that's what we liked about the CX1 too. In a way, though, I think we're actually seeing sort of two different personal systems in HPC develop. One of them is sort of the desktop system that derives most of its power from these new GPUs, the GPUs that mostly NVIDIA is offering, that they can stick in these fairly small form factors.
Yeah.
Basically, you have one or two sockets, and then the whole thing is basically accelerated via GPUs. And then you have things like CX1 and Octane 3, which are mini clusters, but are you can stick in your office, and that's a little bit different, although both of them have GPU acceleration capability. They're more about, you know, the cluster type model. So,
that's right.
And I'm not sure which one is actually going to make it. Maybe both of them will. But I think at this point they're both important because people out there are trying to figure out how to make that transition from, you know, the technical workstation to HPC in a sort of painless way.
Well, I think the critical thing here is going to be the software environment, not just with what ISV codes are qualified, but with how compatible they are. To what extent can these ISVs get it together so that I can take my CATIA output and load it into Abacus, just as an example, or Nastran or something, right? Because I need to bridge that gap between the digital model that I've already got and then some kind of scalable engineering platform. Now, there's one other critical point about both of these boxes that I think is just essential, which is that they both run either Linux or Windows. And this is important because what we've seen is that the CAE environments are still predominantly Linux, but people's workstation environments are still predominantly Windows. So to be able to load both of those into the same box, or if you like, have a scalable Windows cluster and just go with a Windows immersed environment that does deliver scalable HPC performance, but now in the same IT infrastructure that you're used to with workstations, I think is an important feature.
Right, and like you said, they both offer the option. It's interesting that Cray's default position is they give you Microsoft's HPC environment, and then I think SGI's default configuration gives you SUSE Linux.
Well, I think the market will help drive exactly how that gets adopted, and it might even shift over the course of a year or over 2 years, but I think it is an important feature set. The last thing I will say about the ISVs is that this is the challenge platform for them to be able to. That wasn't an intentional SGI pun, by the way, going back to the SGI challenges, but it should challenge the ISV community to come up with a licensing scheme that makes sense for multi-core on these environments to let people adopt those engineering codes, those scientific codes, for the first time in a contained environment, so you're not getting killed on software licenses, and you let people adopt those codes for the first time on these platforms.
Right. I think you're right. And I think software is the key to this. How many applications make that over to these machines, and like you said, with licensing makes that as painless as possible. So
now we've been talking about Microsoft is a critical feature here, and why it matters that they've got an entry level cluster that scales. Microsoft itself was in the news with its own acquisition this week.
Right. We learned this week, sort of in a backhand way, that they've acquired Interactive Supercomputing. Those are the guys that made Star-P, the parallel computing environment that basically distributes MATLAB and Python applications across the cluster. It was a cool little application. They had a bunch of users out there. I remember over the years I've announced, I think dozens of users who were either trying it out or had bought production systems. And then we learned that this week Microsoft bought them out. Now, I hadn't heard very much from Interactive Supercomputing lately, which makes me think, you know, maybe they weren't doing too well. Maybe the recession kind of hit home there, and maybe they were in trouble, and maybe that had something to do with Microsoft's acquisition. On its part, Microsoft didn't say too much about it. They basically announced it via a blog post by Kirill Fanoff, who heads up the HPC group there, which leads me to believe that, you know, this isn't all a happy story. They did say they've acquired the assets. They're going to take Bill Blake and some of the people from Interactive Supercomputing over to Microsoft. They didn't say how many or exactly what positions those would be. And I guess the bad news, if you're an Interactive Supercomputing Star-P user, is that basically the Star-P line is dead. They're going to support it for up to the end of I think next year or however long the support contract. So they will be supporting it, but they're not. They don't intend to keep developing Star-T. Rather, they're going to take that technology and incorporate it into their own parallel computing or Microsoft's own parallel computing work that's ongoing there. So I'm not sure how to take this news. I guess it's good news from Microsoft's point of view. They've got the patents. They've got some intellectual property they can play with now. But Amazon is definitely not a happy story for interactive supercomputing that I think wanted to make it go of it on its own and expand their product line and do more things in that vein. So.
Well, you know, I can't really comment on the status of interactive supercomputing or Star-P. Like you, I hadn't heard much from them extremely recently, although obviously I wish them all well, including Bill Blake, who I've spoken with several times in the past, although just not recently. So, you know, I can't comment on any of those things, but what I can do is talk about what I think, why I think this is an important acquisition for Microsoft, who we know has been, for the last several years, ravenously acquiring people and technologies that are firmly associated with HPC. And when you look at Star-P, what this does to me is it emphasizes a reason to believe that Windows has a legitimate chance of becoming a dominant HPC platform. And before you scoff, consider that one of the big problems in front of the HPC community is how to optimize for parallelism and multi-core. And for Microsoft, this isn't an HPC problem. It's a ubiquitous computing problem that they have to solve for everybody's PCs and laptops. And if they go about developing and acquiring technology such as Star-P, such that they can somehow find a way to dynamically and transparently solve multi-core optimization so that, you know, at the operating system level or just below the operating, just above the operating system level, they're dynamically assigning jobs to cores in any kind of efficient fashion at all, and that technology migrates into HPC, you could quickly get to the point where things are scaling more efficiently on Windows than they are on Linux. Maybe not for all codes and maybe not right away, but we know that price performance rules in HPC. And if you get to the point where a Windows system is outscaling a Linux system, and that's not too crazy a thing to believe might happen, then you're going to see a lot more Windows adoption very quickly.
Well, that's a possibility. I think it's hard for me to imagine that Microsoft would be able to get that much of an edge just via software like this. I mean they're a huge company, obviously, but they're also fighting this huge juggernaut in Linux developers. And there's so much inertia and momentum in Linux, it's hard for me to see Microsoft actually being able to edge out Linux in the software arena in HPC or anywhere else. I think it's going to be a tough go for them. I think this, yeah, maybe this helps to a certain degree. It's not the only parallel computing technology we just saw recently. Intel just acquired two firms that in parallel computing. We saw them acquire Silk at the end of, I think, August, and then RapidMind also left in August. So these parallel computing firms are getting snapped up hither and yon because of money troubles, probably. And it's being distributed out, and Intel doesn't have any particular axe to grind against Linux versus Windows, so that's sort of going to be a wash for them. But, I mean, yeah, this is good for Microsoft. They get this intellectual property, and they get some more expertise, but I don't know if it's going to give them much of an edge here. I think it's going to be a tough go for them. They're doing all the right things, I think. They're doing as much as they can, but, you know, there's a lot of Linux out there to go up against.
You're right, there is. One of the other market trends to watch, though, is the fragmentation of Linux, right? And, you know, how consistent are all those versions of Linux? Because ISVs are struggling at all the combinations of kernel, distro, and chipset that they have to qual against. So a little bit of focus wouldn't hurt Linux there either.
True. That is true, right? It is starting to fray a little bit. I think even Linus Torvald said that Linux is now bloated.
Well, it's the same thing has happened with Unix. For people who who can reach way back into their memory banks and remember the early days of Unix, there were two main flavors, right, because there was AT&T and there was Berkeley, and then people started grabbing one or the other and adding on their own overlays, their own optimizations, and then you got eventually to different branded versions of Unix for this vendor and that vendor. It's not clear to me that that same thing hasn't been happening with Linux.
Right. No, you're right. It has. And yet, I still come back. I think the best parallel computing technology that comes out is probably going to be one that is more or less OS independent. I mean, that's going to be the most powerful model if you can use that under Windows or Linux. That's probably going to be the one to use.
I realize that I've been putting forward an unpopular minority opinion. I first said this about Windows 2 years ago when we were starting up Tabor Research, and said that within 5 years I thought Windows could be a predominant HPC platform. It's 2 years later, and I'll go ahead and advance the timeline 2 years and say that it can happen within three and that we're still on track. So, the clock's ticking, but I still see it out there in terms of the market dynamics. And we've been talking about some of the big companies this week. I think it's hard to bet against Intel, and it's hard to bet against Microsoft in the long term.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm going to hold you that 3 years, though.
Well, that's the same to me as if you held me to the 5 years 2 years ago, so go for it.
We'll come back and then see how it works out. You're a brave man, Adam.
Why they pay me the big bucks to forecast this industry.
Well, I think that's probably all we have for this week. That was a lot of news. In fact, we actually missed a lot more news that we didn't mention. Maybe we'll be able to wrap it up on another week. But I think we're going to have to stop there and come back next week and get a whole new path for news for the last week of September. I'll be at the NVIDIA Technology Conference in San Jose for most of the week, so I'm not sure when we'll be reporting, but I'm sure we'll have a lot of news coming out of that, and I'm guessing there'll be other news around that as well.
Well, that one's local to me, Michael. I'll see you there.
Sounds good.
All right, Michael. I'll talk to you again next week. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Finisar, supplier of active optical cables for high-performance connectivity. For more information on Finisar's active optical cables, visit our website at www.finisarcables.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.